Good morning and welcome to week three of the Florida legislative session. Thank you for joining us for today's FLC Monday morning call-in. For those that are new to the call-in, we start the call with each of the lobbyists discussing the key bills they're working on this week and where we need your help on the advocacy front. Once the lobbyists have shared their updates, we'll open the call for questions. At that point in time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 9 on your phone. As a reminder, this call is being recorded, and we'll send an email summary of today's call as well as a link to the call's recording out later this afternoon. Please note, it's not possible to cover every single bill filed during a 30-minute call-in. For a comprehensive list of bills that we're working on, monitoring, opposing, and supporting, go to flcities.com, click on the legislative bill summaries under the advocacy tab. And so with that, I'll turn it over to David Cruz to start us off.
Thank you, Casey, and good morning, everybody. I want to start off real quick with some good news and give an update on House Bill 401 dealing with sovereign immunity limits. And I want to thank all of you that advocated last week on this bill and that contacted your House member on the House Appropriations Committee. This bill was on the agenda for the House Appropriations Committee last week, and during the committee meeting, the bill was temporarily postponed. And so that is a win for us at the moment. It's not a complete win. The bill is still in play, and it still can be considered whenever the Appropriations Committee were to meet again. And they will be meeting several more times during this session. That's a committee that meets until the very end of session. And so certainly the bill is still in play. However, it was not heard last week, and that is usually a good sign. It's usually an indication that either the votes weren't there to pass it or that there was amendment language that needs to be added onto the bill in order to satisfy the majority of the members on that committee. And so thanks to all of your hard work, the bill was able to be postponed last week. They will not be considering the sovereign immunity bill this week, either in the House or in the Senate. The Senate Judiciary Committee has released their agenda for this week, and that bill is not on it. And on the House side, the House Appropriations Committee is not meeting at all this week. And so the earliest that this bill would be considered again would be the following week. Switching gears, wanted to talk about a bill that we're supporting this morning in committee that aligns with a priority that the Land Use and Economic Development Policy Committee passed, and that deals with mobility plans and mobility fees. This is House Bill 235 that the League of Cities supports, and we'll be supporting it in committee this morning. The bill addresses mobility plans in statute and tries to add some much-needed clarification as to how these plans are to be implemented and how to address situations where there may be conflict between a city that is collecting a mobility fee and a county that is collecting an impact fee. That has arisen in a couple scenarios, and so hopefully this will add much-needed clarity in that regard. The bill also contains a provision dealing with impact fees. Specifically, it addresses a scenario where there's a safety valve, if you will, allowing for a city to increase impact fees past a certain amount and not having to phase it in. An amendment has been offered on that provision that I think adds some much needed clarity to address our concerns with the impact fee part of that bill as well. And so we'll be supporting the amendment that that adds a little bit more clarity to the impact fee part of that bill as well. So that's the update I have for this morning. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Jeff Branch.
Thank you, David. Good morning, everyone. Up today in Ways and Means, House Bill 627, dealing with the housing bill, is up today at 2:30. The League is in support of this bill. This is the last committee stop on the House side before it makes it up to the floor. The Senate bill has already made it through its committee stops and is waiting floor action. That's Senate Bill 102. But up today is House Bill 627. You will recall this bill fully funds the trust fund. Sadowski Trust Funds, codifies the Hometown Heroes Program, makes some changes as it relates to zoning of multifamily properties if the developer meets certain standards, and so that bill is up today. I want to thank you all for the feedback that you've given me for House Bill 671 dealing with residential permits. We won't know until this afternoon if that bill will be up this coming Wednesday, in regulatory reform and economic development. So please keep sending the feedback on that bill. And if you have any members that are in your legislative delegation that's on that committee, regulatory reform and economic development, please continue to reach out to them. And with that, I will hand it over to Rebecca.
Thank you, Jeff. Good morning, everyone. First, I'm going to talk about House Bill 1515 relating to local ordinances by Representative Brackett. This is a bill, you will recall, that was around from last year. It puts requirements in place for cities and counties to conduct business impact statements before they adopt an ordinance. It provides for the stay of an ordinance if an ordinance is challenged by somebody as being expressly preempted or arbitrary or unreasonable. And that bill is going to be heard in the Civil Justice Committee this morning at 10 a.m. Because of the bill last year, we were able to get some changes to it that enabled us to take a position of support of the bill. We will maintain that position of support this year. The bill is identical to the how that bill looked at the end of last year, with a couple of changes. It's got an amendment on there that addresses a ordinance adoption issue related to a recent court decision. That's very helpful for us as well. So that's House Bill 1515. Then also at 10 a.m. this morning is House Bill 975 relating to solid waste management by Representative Holcomb. That will be heard this morning at 10 a.m. in the Local Administration, Federal Affairs, and Special District Subcommittee. The League strongly opposes this bill. We sent an alert out to you last week asking you to contact members of the committee to let them know of your city's opposition to the bill. And for those of you that have done that, we thank you very much. The bill does have an amendment pending to it. The amendment attempts to exempt cities that provide their own waste services using their own city employees and their own equipment. It will exempt them from the bill. So that's a positive change. But the underlying bill is still very objectionable. It's a serious, serious fiscal impact on our communities and puts your public health and safety at risk with the other provisions in the bill. Another bill on that same agenda is House Bill 1281 relating to the preemption of utility service restrictions. This is in the House Local Administration Subcommittee. We're keeping an eye on that bill, but just note that it is a preemption relating to gas stoves and whether local governments can regulate gas stoves. That's House Bill 1281. This afternoon in the Senate Environmental and Natural Resources Committee is Senate Bill 162 relating to water and wastewater facility operators. That's at 12:30 today. This is one of the League's adopted legislative policies. It allows for reciprocity and licensing for these operators that come from other states, and we support that bill, that's Senate Bill 162. Tomorrow, a couple of bills to flag for you dealing with municipal water, wastewater, and electric utilities, starting with House Bill 1331. That's 1331 by Representative Visada Cabrera. It will be heard in the House Energy, Communications, and Cybersecurity Subcommittee tomorrow at 2 p.m. This is the bill that would have put all of our utilities under the jurisdiction of the Public Service Commission. It would have prevented transfers from the utility to the general fund, and it would have eliminated the ability of cities to impose surcharges for extraterritorial service. There is a proposed committee substitute that has been filed to that bill that is a significant improvement to the bill. It removes the provisions relating to Public Service Commission regulation. There is no prohibition on transfers of utility revenues into the general fund. Instead, the bill allows the use of a portion of utility revenues to fund general government, but establishes a transfer rate that must be used. The transfer rate has to be based on an average of the rate of return approved by the Public Service Commission for private utilities. Right now, that midpoint value for those private utilities is around 10.2%. So that change will still adversely affect some cities, particularly the smaller fiscally constrained jurisdictions. And there's also language in the bill that will require that transfer rate to be further reduced based on the percentage of extraterritorial customers served. So I'll tell you, that's an improvement over the original bill, but there are still some cause for concern. We're going to keep working on that one, but I think we do need to recognize that the bill sponsor made significant changes to the better for it. And lastly, as it relates to the extraterritorial surcharge issue, the proposed committee substitute does eliminate the default 25% surcharge that you can assess extraterritorial customers. It retains the second surcharge that allows you to go up to 50%, but it reduces that 50% number to 25%. So that will definitely impact some utilities that are doing surcharges in excess of 25%, and it could be an immediate reduction in revenues upon the bill becoming law, and the effective date of the bill is July 2024. Similarly, another bill that's basically the companion to House Bill 1331 will also be heard tomorrow, and that is Senate Bill 1380 relating to municipal electric utilities. Right now, this bill applies only to electric utilities, but we expect an amendment will be filed sometime today to match the proposed committee substitute that has been filed to the House bill. So the Senate bill, as amended, which we expect will happen, will be identical to the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 1331 that I just described to you, and it will include all utilities, electric, gas, water, and sewer. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Tara Taggart.
Thank you, Rebecca, and good morning, everyone. Two bills to put on your radar for week three. The first one is up this afternoon. It's Senate Bill 1010 by Senator Gruters, and it will be heard in the Senate Children, Families, and Elder Affairs Committee. We are opposed to that bill as originally filed. The bill would have created a statewide task force to study the effect of local zoning codes and regulations on sober homes, recovery residences, mental health residences, whatever you would like to call them. The bill would have exempted these residences from all local regulations and applicable state laws for 3 years while the task force conducts that study. Good news, there is an amendment filed that removes all provisions impacting local government zoning regulations. It's also removing the requirement for the creation of this task force. After the adoption of that amendment today, the bill will now only address some provisions relating to recovery residence administration. So we are supportive of that amendment. Up tomorrow at 2 p.m. is House Bill 1511 by Representative Gia Lombardo dealing with cybersecurity. We are currently monitoring this bill. What the bill is doing, it's modifying a few provisions of the Local Government Cybersecurity Act that passed last session. Specifically, it's modifying some timelines for incident reporting, taking these timelines down from 48 hours to 4 for just severe cybersecurity incidents. And then for ransomware incidents, it's taking that timeline down from 12 hours to 2 hours. So we are currently seeking changes to bump those hours up a little bit. That way it's workable for our local governments to ensure compliance. It also is providing a presumption from liability if a local agency is substantially compliant with the standards set forth in that Cybersecurity Act. One other non-legislative related, but a friendly reminder in the cybersecurity realm, the grant program that was created last session with the $30 million in funding to go to local governments around the state of Florida, that grant program has been live, and the applications will be closing March 31st. So if your local government is interested in applying for some of these resources the state is offering, please get those in by March 31st, and you can access that at cybergrants.fl.gov, or you can find that information on our cybersecurity portal on our website. And with that, I will toss it over to Charles Chapman.
Good morning, everybody. Two bills to put on your radar that is on the batting lineup for this week. The first one is today, Monday, March 20th, 2:30 p.m., House Ways and Means Committee is the constitutional amendment, House Bill 469, House Bill 471 by Representative Fernandez-Barquin, dealing with the revised limitations on homestead tax exemptions. This bill, if it passes, would be placed on the ballot in November of 2024. and we reduced the homestead caps from 3% or CPI to 2% or CPI. We stand in opposition to this bill. We have had several meetings. No amendments have been filed as of yet, so we will be making a statement today by opposing this bill. Again, we are actively working committee members this morning, so please stay engaged on this bill. If you have time to reach out to any members of the Ways and Means Committee today, please tell your stories and help us continue to advocate against this constitutional amendment. Up tomorrow on March 21st, Tuesday, 2:30 at Regulated Industries in the Senate is Senate Bill 1432 by Senator Trumbull, dealing with some revisions to the communication services tax. This bill does three things. One, it lowers the state surtax by 1.4%. It also freezes your local option surtax at 3 years, beginning January 1, 2023 through January 1, 2026. And then lastly, it has some new language in the franchise fee section of the communication services tax bill that we are looking to seek clarification on. We are also actively meeting with members and the Senate sponsor today to get more clarity on the intent of the bill, as well as anxiously awaiting the staff analysis for the full statewide fiscal impact. So please stay engaged on that bill. No further from me at the moment, so I'll kick it back to Casey Cook.
Thank you, Charles. As you can see, it is an incredibly busy week three. This is job security week for league lobbyists with all the packed agendas that we have. That's normal for this process. As a reminder, it feels like the legislature is a little bit behind at this point in the legislative session. The first 4 weeks of session are usually crazy as bills slowly fall by the wayside. And so I think that's one explanation for the packed agendas that we've seen. So far, the House is still on a 48-hour notice deadline. And so as Jeff referred to in his comments, we're still waiting to see what the back half of the week looks like, but we expect it to be just as busy as the front half. So now we'll transition into the question and answer portion of the call. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, press *9 on your phone. And then when it's your turn to speak, please state your name and the city that you're affiliated with. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, *9. And then when recognized, state your name and your city. First question, fire away.
Hey, this is Donnie Wolf with the City of Miami. How y'all doing?
Good. How about yourself?
Very good. Very good. So, my attention this week is on this local ordinance bill, which we fought tooth and nail last session. So my question is two-part. One is why the League of Cities supports this version of the bill, and any more specifics as to the burden of the city in creating kind of a business impact statement or report, and what that must entail if this bill were to pass.
Thank you. This is Rebecca O'Hara. To answer your question, the League supports the bill because last year this bill was amended substantially at our request to include a number of exemptions from the bill for allowing cities to continue the basic government functions such as procurement, adopting budgets, amending their comprehensive plan, and adopting their land development regulations and things like that. In addition, we were able to get a cap on the attorney's fees. We were able to get provisions changed in the bill relating to the stay of enforcement, allowing judges to impose sanctions on parties that bring pleadings or filings for an improper purpose, and some additional changes that probably I could go into further detail, but it would take too long. But because of that, we were able to get into a position of supporting the bill. And lastly, to sort of sweeten the pot, this year, the Senate sponsor and the House sponsor have included a recent amendment to that bill to address a 4th District Court of Appeal decision that would have substantially impaired our ability to continue ordinances on second reading to a future public hearing, and would have jeopardized current actions that cities had taken that deviated from that procedural requirement. So that's an important change in that bill that will help a lot of us. So The bottom line, it put us in a position of being able to support the bill last year and again this year. So in terms of your question about the business impact statement, it is not intended to be an onerous requirement on local governments. It is simply, did you do it or did you not do it? There is no mechanism in the bill allowing somebody to challenge your ordinance based on whether your business impact statement is sufficient or goes into enough detail, et cetera. It is simply an additional requirement that you have to consider prior to adoption based on your reasonable estimates of how an ordinance may affect the businesses in your community. What I like to describe this as is something similar to what the legislature currently does on for itself when they're considering bills in committee. Every bill before it's heard in committee is accompanied by a bill analysis that at the end includes an estimate of fiscal impact. I believe that the requirement in this local ordinance bill is something similar to what the legislature already does for itself.
Thank you, Donnie. Next question.
Hi, this is Sherry Simmons from the City of DeBary. I also had that question on the impact statement because it is onerous, especially for small cities. But my concern this morning is SB 774. I will tell you, I filled out a financial disclosure for an ambassador with a top secret clearance. I have a top secret clearance. Mine was not as onerous as this is. And my mayor, she will not run again if she has to. Not that she's hiding anything, but it's very onerous in that you have to pull out the addresses for all your investments. We have reached out. We have a good relationship with the senator who's sponsoring it. And just to let you know, we've reached out and said, could there be exemptions for smaller cities? Can we remove the address requirements? Can it take effect at the next election? So I don't know what the league is trying to negotiate there, but that's kind of what we're bringing up.
Sure, and thank you. That's a great question, Sherry. And so the financial disclosure bill is a hot topic as background for the group. The Commission on Ethics has been pushing this bill for the last 8 or 9 years. This remains their top priority. Legislators file that comprehensive financial disclosure form, also known as Form 6. City officials file Form 1, which is a limited financial disclosure requirement. The limited financial disclosure requirement requires you to list assets and liabilities, but not tie an actual dollar amount to them. The comprehensive financial disclosure form requires you to tie a dollar amount, and ultimately it generates a net worth statement. We've heard those same concerns from many city officials. This bill probably should have passed last year. I believe it passed through every committee and the House last year unanimously and was moving similarly through the Senate last year and ultimately got caught up at the last minute. The league has been working this bill. We have met with several legislators, and the responses we get back are, well, if I have to do it, so too should you. They believe that by tying an actual dollar amount or requiring city officials to list the dollar amount, that may be enough of a deterrent or to stop somebody from breaking the law, or it may bring to light where somebody has broken the law. There's a couple points in that you brought up, and I think they're great. One, the effective dates of the bill should be moved. This is, the current bill is essentially changing the rules of the game mid-game. And city officials should be able to factor in whether or not they want to file a comprehensive financial disclosure form when they decide to run for re-election. I do think that that's within the realm of possible of getting that effective date moved out. The second thing is one version, I believe it's the House bill, currently requires city managers to also file that comprehensive financial disclosure bill. The Senate bill was amended last week to remove city managers from the bill. If there were some interesting committee meetings, I would encourage folks to go back and look at the legislative updates that we sent out because there were a couple of different discussion items. One was potentially exempting cities based on population or budget size. That has piqued the interest of certain legislators, especially on the Senate side. And so that's also a possibility that's out there. This bill is speeding through the process based on being in week three and having multiple hearings. It only has two references on the Senate side. If I had to look into a crystal ball, I think that bill passes this year. So what can we do to potentially slow this thing down or get some of the amendments that I talked about? It's imperative that each of you contact your legislators and let them know that this bill would negatively impact you. From several small cities, we've heard that this will be enough of a deterrent that we won't have enough candidates to fill our commission. Well, I think it's important to tell those stories to your legislators. That's the only way I think that we make a difference on this bill. The second is come to Tallahassee. Hat tip to those that traveled up to Tallahassee that responded to our alert and actually spread that message through public testimony during those bill hearings. We're going to need more of that, because I can tell you the messages from the local elected officials have a far greater chance of resonating than anything coming from lobbyists. And so if you care about that bill, start making those phone calls to your legislators now. And then when we send out another alert asking folks to come to Tallahassee, I would encourage you to travel to Tallahassee to speak and raise those same concerns during public testimony. Sherry, thank you for the question. I hope that was provided an answer for you.
Yep, thank you. I'll actually going to be in Tallahassee the 28th and 29th, but we're already talking to our state senator on this. So it does impact, especially in small cities where we don't have a huge pool of candidates. So it does impact us.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's a great reminder that when you're in Tallahassee, please come by the league office. We love doing briefings for our members. So give us a call and set one of those up if you're planning to travel to Tallahassee in the next few weeks. Next question.
Hi, this is BJ Bishop from Longboat Key. Just to continue the conversation briefly on this bill, we have asked for an exemption. We are one of only, I think, two or three municipalities in the state of Florida that receive no compensation for serving on the commission. So for us, this bill becomes even more onerous, and we have the same difficulty with a small population of finding candidates, but finding candidates who basically volunteer 40 hours a week of their time to serve an elected office and not get paid, this is a particularly onerous addition.
Thank you, BJ, for that point, and we have certainly raised it in our meetings with members of the House and the Senate. I can tell you that it hasn't resonated with some. Some argue that the lower the compensation drives up the incentive to do illegal stuff or cut deals with buddies. We have brought that issue up. We will continue to bring that issue up. I think it's a good issue, but it has not landed like we thought it would, but we'll continue to move forward with that. Thank you, BJ. All right. Well, I'm getting the signal that we don't have any more questions in the queue. Thank you for joining us this week. As you can see, it's a busy week three. Stay close to your phone, stay close to your computer so that when we send out those alerts, you can respond quickly. We are only as good as our members. You all have done a phenomenal job so far, but we need to keep it up through session to stop some of these bad bills that we've talked about on the call. As a reminder, we'll be back next week, same time, same place, for another Monday morning call-in. And the final thing is, if you're coming to Tallahassee for the League's Legislative Action Days on April 3rd through 5th, this Wednesday at 2 p.m., we're doing a Know Before You Go webinar. Please consider attending that. If you haven't seen the links, you can find them on our website. You should have received links to that when you signed up for Legislative Action Days, but it will be a good primer for when you get to Tallahassee so you can hit the ground running. Thanks, everybody. We will see you next week.